So welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the Invited Educational Symposium, Communicating Autism Science. I'm Allison Singer. I'm the president of the Autism Science Foundation and the co-chair of the IMFAR Press and Public Relations Committee, along with Dana Marnane, who's the other co-chair. We, as I think many of you are already aware, it's no longer enough to simply conduct a study. The scientific process now requires us to share results not only with the broader autism community, but in many cases with society at large. So dissemination of autism research no longer ends with publication in a peer-reviewed journal. Media interest in autism has grown steadily over the past few years, and most of you as scientists should expect to hear from press after publishing research findings. Press and other stakeholders, many of whom now write blogs, have also become regular attendees at scientific conferences like IMFAR. So today, we're going to help you gain specific skills in interacting with the press and with stakeholders while still maintaining a commitment to scientific principles. Our first speaker will be Jane Rubenstein, who's the Senior Vice President at top PR firm Rubenstein & Associates, and she will walk us through the process of creating a communications plan around your research and will help us learn why it makes so much sense to take a little time up front to prepare a plan. She'll give specific advice on how to write and stick to a three-point media plan. She'll help us learn how to handle curveball questions, and she'll also talk about why it's so important to control body language when doing an in-person interview. Then we'll hear directly from a major media journalist, Karen Weintraub, about what makes a great article and what you can do to make sure your quotes wind up in the story. Karen is a health and science journalist who has covered everything from cancer to astrophysics to autism for publications including the Boston Globe, USA Today, and Nature Magazine. She also teaches science journalism at Boston University and has worked with doctors at Massachusetts General Hospital on books aimed at general readers, including the newly published The Autism Revolution, which was published last March. Finally, we'll hear from Dana Marnane, the Vice President for Awareness and Events at Autism Speaks, and as I said, co-chair of the IMFAR Press and PR Committee. Dana will focus on communicating directly with stakeholders, including families, individuals with autism, and bloggers. Each of our speakers will give their talk, and we'd like to hold Q&A until the end of all of the presentations. Also, I want to mention that Elise Welker from Kennedy Krieger Institute, who was scheduled to be part of this panel, unfortunately is not able to be here because she had a death in her family. So when her turn arrives, I will try my best to show a few of her most important slides. So before we get started, I wanted to share some recent data just published in PLOS 1 by Dr. Elaine Eklund, which focused on scientist participation in public affairs activities and in the media. This work focused on press activities by academic physicists and biologists, but I think many of the issues she discussed are relevant to academic scientists in general. The data showed that only slightly more than half of the academic scientists, 58%, were engaged in some sort of media outreach about their work, with women participating at a 72% rate and men only at a 43% rate. It's interesting that all of the panelists here today are also women. Also very interesting was the fact that 5% of the participants accounted for more than half of the media quotes. More than half of the scientists who were polled cited lack of time as the most insurmountable barrier to doing more outreach. But 37% of the respondents said they didn't want to be involved with media because they felt that as scientists, they lacked the necessary communication skills to participate. So we hope that after today's discussion, that number, in this room at least, will be dramatically lower. We'll start now with Jane Rubenstein from Rubenstein & Associates, who's going to walk us through the steps of creating a successful media plan.
Good afternoon, and I'm Jane Rubenstein from Rubenstein, And if you take down my email, no, that's not a typo. The two spellings are one letter different. Makes for interesting introductions on the phone with the media all the time. So I'm here to help explain, what is public relations? Public relations helps you secure unpaid media coverage in outlets such as TV and print and radio, as well as in social media. Now, by quick show of hands, how many of you wake up in the morning and the first thing you do is listen to news on the radio? I do, that's my alarm. You read the morning newspaper, perhaps in print or perhaps on some electronic media. Okay, parents often turn to various social outlets, blogs, or some of their favorite organizations to get a synopsis of compelling news. So it's important to remember people get their news from different sources. So when you're disseminating your news, you want to embrace multiple sources. What are some of your goals? You want to present all of your research. You want to present it as part of the essential part of your research, as Allison was saying. You want to start your research with the premise that you will be publicizing the results, even when you have negative findings. You need to set your message agenda, and you need to give it the context. It's your best opportunity to present your research in the best possible lights. A lot of people don't understand the difference between PR and advertising. So we have a little, We have a little saying in our field, PR is the placement you pray for, advertising is the placement you pay for. So what's the difference? In media, you can't script the reporter, you can't script the timing, the content, the experts they pull in for third-party opinions or how they edit and put the final story together, but you can script your input, you can present yourself in the best possible light and your findings in the best possible light, and when the story is done, there's a presumption of truth and importance because it appeared on the news. In advertising, you completely control everything. What you write, how you present it, where you present it, how long the advertisement will run, but has much lower credibility because everyone knows you paid for the message. So we want to help you maximize your control, and we want to advise you plan in advance. So first, how are you presenting your research? Is it going in a peer-reviewed journal or being presented at a conference such as INFAR? And you want to start to plan the specific media plan from the moment your paper or your presentation is accepted. We all know that embargoes are getting shorter and shorter, and the amount of notice you're getting is shorter and shorter, sometimes a matter of days or hours for some online publications. So you've got to be ready to go. You need to work with your team from the moment you're accepted. And we know that embargoes do matter. Now, traditional media will respect embargoes. They have important relationships with those journals who provide them advanced press releases, advanced abstracts, and will provide proof copies of the papers in advance. They're not going to violate that relationship and that trust. However, blogs don't typically have those editorial controls. So you have to be very careful about giving anything in advance on an embargo to a blogger. And I've even had a situation where a blogger related to a major media outlet broke an embargo because they said, we're a blog. So you need to get a formal sign-off, we will respect the embargo, and at least that way you can turn back to the peer review journal and say, I had a sign-off that they were going to respect the embargo. And be very careful, I've had some institutions who want to create news on an embargoed basis without it being connected to an article or a conference because they have some business reason to create some compelling time frame. We're all going to release this now. We want everybody reporting on it now. We're going to put this out on embargo. That does not work well. And I've even had major media say, it's not from a journal, it's not a real embargo, and if you put it in the email to me, it's fair game. I didn't sign off that I was going to respect that embargo. So buyer beware. You can maximize control by making your plan and sticking to it. That being early is so important. And even before you publish this paper, present this presentation, work with your local media and become a go-to source. Allison quoted that wonderful statistic about how so many of the quotes are actually delivered by so few experts. You too can become one of those experts, and over time, you become a trusted source, a credible source, a third-party expert reporting and commenting on other people's research to give it context, and when the time comes for your research, you have greater credibility and a stronger relationship with the media reporting. And please remember, your press office is your partner, and Allison will talk about that on Elise Volker's behalf in a moment. You want to go to them right from the beginning and work with them. And the last thing, please inform your funding agency, inform the organization who's given you a grant. They can be so helpful in expanding your message. They will write their own release. They will put out their own experts. They might provide you a quote to include in your press release. They'll put items on their electronic newsletters, in their printed material, on their websites. They're very important partners, so please be sure to inform them. Allison talked about the three-point media plan. I call it the rule of threes. You need three key messages, and you want three supporting points to back up those messages. You need to convey, how does this move research forward? And importantly, what does this mean for families? You must give it context, because remember, media is talking to the public. Everybody knows somebody affected by autism. You want to reach them in a way that they're going to understand. You also need a reality check, and that's part of maximizing your control. Be prepared for the unexpected. Reporters are going to ask, is this really ready for prime time? They're going to challenge you, and you need to politely give the proper context on why your results are valid and important and move research forward. Now, what you do here in autism research is so important, but it's not always interesting to the media. If something is replicating a prior study or moving it a little bit forward, it may not be considered news. It may not be considered new for the media to present to the public. So understand it. Don't take it personally. Help share with those science reporters. Look at this work we're doing that's moving your prior story forward. When you're ready to talk on this again, please come back to me. That's a way to make use of even those kinds of studies that may not receive direct coverage. And then there's what I call the N factor. How big is your study? And, you know, there are some studies with thousands, more of them with hundreds, and even more of them with a few dozen. It's important to give it context. If the population of people you're dealing with is very small, who have a certain set of characteristics, and as a result you have a small study with a small N, be sure to inform the media. Make sure they understand that the size of the study is still important and is still relevant. Now, once you're in the interview, what do? You need to listen. You need to listen to the question clearly. You'll appear more engaged. Don't jump into answer. It's okay to take a breath. You'll appear more engaged. You'll appear more control. The moment you take that breath, it may feel like an eternity, particularly if you're on TV, but it's really not. It really plays okay on the camera. Assemble your response. And if the reporter leaves you with dead air, do not feel the need to jump in and fill that dead air. It's a technique they use. They're looking to see if maybe you'll jump off your key message points and fill the space. Resist that human nature. Resist that urge. Wait for the next question. And remember, nothing is off the record. So, except for when you're in live TV and when you're on a radio interview where they're recording it and you need to be on a landline alone so you don't dilute the signal, have your press office staff your calls. If you have a PR representative, have them on the calls listening in. If something starts to go awry, they can jump in and stop it and just say, I think you've asked that several times. Can we move on? Let them be your backup. They can give you feedback afterwards and constructive advice. And with your phone messages, with your phone interviews, don't hesitate to keep your messages right in front of you, your 3 points with your 3 backup supporting pieces of information. And if I was really good, I'd know how to use electronic technology. Okay, how do you get ready? Practice, practice, practice out loud. Talk it all the time. Driving in the car to the office. You want it rolling off your tongue in a very natural context. It'll increase your comfort level. You'll sound more natural. You'll sound more confident. Okay? Use a few vivid phrases. Humanize it. Personalize it. You can relate it. If you're a researcher who sees also families in a clinical setting, you can say, you know, when I've seen families that, when I've seen a child that, it makes the research feel more human, it makes you feel more connected to the work you're doing. Now, it's important to remember, you might need to shift the direction of the interview, and we're going to share with you some pivotal phrases that you can use. And always, always, always be available when the media calls. You know that from the moment your journal goes out in advance, sometimes a week out, sometimes only days out, in advance of an online publication, they're going to be calling. Don't have your calendar booked with a lot of conferences and meetings and travel. You're only hurting yourself. Be available. And well in advance of this particular paper, be available as well. Media is all about deadlines. So when you're creating those relationships to act as a third-party expert, be available, call back quickly, be responsive, find out what the deadline is, help the reporter do their job, and they will be appreciative. Don't prepare the prepared. Don't assume that they know the subject well. Don't assume that they really know autism or scientific research. Many regional reporters who work in your city aren't trained in that area. Yes, there are national reporters who focus and specialize on scientific matters. Don't assume you're just going to get standard questions. Don't assume they're going to be limited to your research. Keep your responses short and to the point, and we have what we call the 12-second test. If you can't convey that soundbite in 12 seconds, too long. They won't get it. You'll get lost. Work with your press officer to fine-tune. Keep repeating your key messages no matter what. So if a reporter says to you, "Is the sky really blue?" you say, "What's really important to remember is," and go back to your key message. If they come at you with a curveball question, "Isn't it really true that all autism is due to environmental insults on my child? The key finding we had in our study," those are some of those pivotal responses. Answer the question you want to answer, not necessarily the question you're asked. Treat every interview as live. Give a good energy level. Be positive. Be poised. And don't let them see you sweat, because then you don't come across with strong credibility. We talked about some of those pivot phrases. Here are a few more. Whoops. You can also say, "Let's take a step back. I'd like to emphasize the point I made earlier." You'll come up with some of your own. Keep them in your repertoire. They're important tools in your toolkit. Yes and no questions. It's more complicated than yes or no. What I'd really like the viewer or the reader to understand. Don't fall prey to just answering yes or no. And "I don't know" is really okay. So again, that can be your bridge, like a pivot. It can bridge you to giving your key message. You can ask for a deadline, and this works on phone interviews, not in live camera, not a live radio interview. But you can say, "Gee, I'm really not sure. What's your deadline? I'll get back to you." You'll have more credibility than fumbling to recall a fact or to provide a source of information. It works very well, and it's appreciated. Make a referral and make a friend of that reporter, and now you become a go-to source, and they might come back and say, "You know, you were so helpful in giving me access to Dr. Jones. Could you possibly talk to me about this issue now?" And that's how you develop those media relationships. Some good techniques. I think you'll recognize most of these. You've probably heard them before. It's very important also to maintain eye contact. You want to look at the reporter, look at the interviewer, not at the camera. The only time you have to look at the camera is when you're doing a remote interview and you're locked in this little sound booth and it's you in a dark room with a camera with a red light blinking at you. It's a little disconcerting to some people. So try to bring someone with you. I'll go with my clients and I'll stand right next to that camera so that when the person being interviewed is talking, they're looking at me and they're able to give some more natural facial expressions. It's very helpful instead of staring into that electronic device. And your goodbye. You want to use your goodbye as your last tool. Thank you for having me. It was so important that I was able to explain. It's important for the public to remember. Just don't say, thank you for paying attention to the important issue of autism. That's a wasted moment. You want to repeat your mantra. And by the way, throughout the interview, repeat the name of your institution. The research we did at ABC Hospital, the research we did at XYZ University. If you have a lapel pin, wear it high up. Men, on the upper notch of your collar. Women, very close to your neck. Pay attention on TV how they crop the headshots. If you wear the pin down too low, it won't show. There goes your branding. You want to be branded. If you're doing an interview in your organization, you want branding behind you, identification, because not every station is good or reliable about the chyron that they put across the bottom of the screen. They might not put everything you want. That's your opportunity to make sure the world knows this research was done by your organization. I want to give you a quick little case study. We all heard about the CDC announcement of autism prevalence. Here are some of the top outlets that appeared in the United States. And what's interesting is the CDC told me that in their top 10 print and online outlets, their views were over 4.5 million. Their audience was over 4.5 million people. And in their top 10 TV outlets, almost 23 million, tremendous reach. So what did they do? They planned early. They reached out and started their media planning more than 6 months in advance. They had the press briefing that included experts, and not just CDC people, but they included external experts, because we all know that there are reporters who specialize, and the reporters who write about the CDC write about every issue the CDC reports on, whether it's autism or some other health condition. So they wanted to provide context. What does this mean to the community? So they included experts who could give the relevance and the importance to the community. They started with an embargoed process, held their media telebriefing, had a telebriefing for their partners who are autism organizations who then often carried it in their blogs and on their websites. And in this case, they offered advance exclusives. Not that the story came out in advance of the embargo, but they were given advance access to information and for interviews. They picked one print outlet, they picked one TV outlet. And as part of that process, not only did they get these are the facts, this is the prevalence, but they got stories that said this is the context, this is what early intervention is about, this is what treatment is about, this is what research is about, this is how it's going to inform research. And they reported their findings and conveyed the implications. What were their 3 points? The numbers. Okay, 3 supporting points. We all know what the 3 supporting points were. What's 1 in 88? Prevalence. What's 1 in 54? Males. What's 5? The ratio of boys to girls. Excellent. They did a good job. They talked about their methodology. They talked about their monitoring sites, that it was an administrative records review, and what children were included in the study. And they gave some important details of their work about the Hispanic and African American communities and the increased prevalence, but the need for more diagnosis and more outreach to those communities. They talked that the age of diagnosis hasn't improved, but it was still way too old, and that there was more information on more individuals with autism being diagnosed who did not have intellectual disability. And in expanding the messages, the American Academy of Pediatrics provided these supporting points. And they referred back to their messaging, learn the signs, act early, the importance of early diagnosis and early intervention, and where research should head in the future. And Autism Speaks provided the context that this is a public health emergency and a crisis and an epidemic to the community that needs national action. Indicated that we still believe that prevalence is underestimated and that adults with autism is an area that's still not yet adequately studied, but it's a major social problem now. And concurrent with the announcement of prevalence, and it was just more luck that the two timing coincided, there was an announcement of new research on the cost of autism that they had funded. So I'm sure that many of you were aware last week of a major pediatrics paper. Perhaps the paper wasn't so major, but it certainly got a lot of coverage, how 1 in 3 young adults had difficulty and barriers accessing employment and college when they were impacted by autism. And the work that was done in announcing the prevalence gave the context, adults with autism matter. This is a big issue now in the United States. And so when this subsequent paper came along, it got a great deal of attention with very significant pickup from the stories. So I'd like to thank you by reminding you that media is your friend in your research and that you too can become proficient if you practice, practice, practice. Thank you.